We're doing Makot, we're up to Daf Beis Amud Beis, the second wide line. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braisa that was validated by the Academy of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya. Dalei dvarim ne'emru be'edim zomemin. Four things were said with regard to edim zomemin. And on a different occasion, we will have to discuss what does that mean they were said. By whom? By the tradition? Okay, so we'll leave that hanging for a different time. Ein nasim ben gushal ben chalutza. Number one, edim zomemin do not become chalalim. Even if they testify that the person is ben gushal ben chalutza, that he's the son of a divorcee or a chalutza, and so he's an invalidated coin, we don't do that to them. The engolin lare miklat, they don't go into exile to the city of refuge. Vein mishalmin et hakofer, nor do they pay kofer. If an ox gored someone to death, and this is his third time, so then the owner has to pay redemption money, so to speak. The Torah says, "In kofer yushat alav." He has to redeem his soul because he was negligent. His ox killed someone three times, so then he has to pay kofer.
And it's someone who's. Ox is muad.
Correct. And the ox is muad.
He's supposed to guard him and he was negligent and he killed someone.
Right.
So the punishment is that the ox is killed and he has to pay.
Right.
Versus if he wasn't muad, just the ox would be killed?
Correct. Very good. So if they testified that this guy's forewarned ox killed someone, killed for a third time, they wanted to make the defendant pay kofar money. And now they were found to be zomimin. They do not have to pay the kofar. Ve'en nimkarin be'eved ivri. Nor do they get sold as an eved ivri. If they testified that so-and-so stole $1 million. Now so-and-so, let's say Chaim Yankel, he doesn't have $1 million to pay. So the courts were prepared to sell him as an Eved Ivri to pay up for what he stole. And then they were found to be Edom Zomimim. They do not get sold as an Eved Ivri. Even though technically that's what they would have inflicted upon him. That's not what they testified about. They testified that he stole. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, they said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, which is an unusual way of saying it, Af. Ein mishalmin al piatzman. They don't either pay if they admit. We have a rule like this. Mode biknas patur. If someone was supposed to pay a tax, let's say someone was obligated to pay kefel. He stole, he was caught. And now he has to pay the principal plus a tax of double payment, a second payment of the principal, what's called kefel. So then let's say the thief turned himself in. He wasn't caught. He came to the courts and said, I'm sorry, I stole. I want to pay back what I stole. So then he would pay back the principal without kefel. Mode biknas patur. We have a rule, one who admits to an offense that would obligate him to pay a tax is absolved from paying the tax because he admitted. Now, the Bryce over here is saying, if these Edim Zomimim admitted, then they don't have to pay back the tax. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Now, it's more complex than that because we have a rule, Kivan She'egid, Shuvin Ochozer U'magid. Once a witness testified, he can't go back to Beis Din and say, gee, I lied, I take it back. You can't do that. Once you testified, you cannot take back testimony. Even if he says, but I want to tell you I lied, we won't believe him. You testified, we accepted it. Goodbye. So what's it talking about? How could it be that Edom Zomimim will admit and be absolved from paying the tax? So Rashi explains, if they testified And then the courts ruled based on their testimony, but the court did not execute it. And then they became Edim Zomimim. But now the defendant, who now becomes the prosecutor, once they became Edim Zomimim, so he demands of them, pay me back what you wanted to inflict on me. And he did not have an opportunity to bring them to court before they had a chance. They ran away and they came before another court. And they tell the second court, we admit we were caught as Edim Zomimim. We owe Chaim Yankel $1 million. Ah, you admit? Modu b'knas patur. That's Rabbi Akiva's big chiddush here. That afen mishalmin al pi atzman. They don't even pay if they admit that they owe the money. So you need this convoluted case, because stam kacha, how could they admit? Yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to analyze the Braisa piecemeal.
The exemption from Kefil and others, this is a biblical thing?
As we will see, it is. Yes. Has to be, because the Torah obligates, so only the Torah can absolve. Yeah. Sure. It's a chiyuv d'oraisa, it's a knas d'oraisa, so you need a p'tur d'oraisa. Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some rabbinic way of sedimenting that.
You're right, there is. I was wondering if I should go into that now. There is.
And they could give the money back afterwards.
Very good, Yehuda, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. But that's a chiddush. You're right. The rabbis could get around things. Yes. We have a rule, hefker, bezdin, hefker. And through that, bezdin could do whatever they want. Like you said, they could give it back. So they could just say...
Is that hefker, bezdin, hefker?
Very good. You're 100%. So that's a big discussion. Right. You're 100% right. How does that work? You're right.
I mean, you don't need hefker bedin hefker. He paid.
Well, hefker bedin hefker, so that's the big question, like you're saying. Wouldn't he have to pay, and then they'll have to give it back? So that's not our sugya here, because this is d'oraisa. When you get to the sugya, so it's drabanan, there you'll have to deal with it. You're right. It's a whole discussion in Rishonim, Achronim. You're 100% right. You're on the mark, only this isn't our topic. Back to our Gemara. Okay, so the first two are easy. The first two laws of the Braisa, the Gemara already derived. What did we say? Ein nasin ben gushal ben chalutza. You won't make them into chalolim kedamaran. Well, we proved that in Amud Aleph. Then golin lare miklat. They don't get exiled. Okay, kedamaran. We proved that at the top of the page. We won't make them pay redemption money if they testify that his ox gored when it was a mu'ad, kasavah, kufra kapara. Okay, so in order to understand what's going on here, we have to introduce this. So we'll skip two lines, and then we'll come back to this Gemara. Ditanya, you see two lines later, Ditanya, we have the following braisa. The Torah says when a person's ox gored for a third time, killed someone a third time, v'natan pidyon nafsho. So then the owner of the ox must redeem his soul for what happened. The ox killed someone a third time, he has to redeem his soul for that. So how does that work? Tanakama says, t'mei nizak. You want to redeem your soul? So then, you evaluate the person who was killed. That's how you redeem the soul. However we evaluate a human being, you evaluate the person who was killed. So then how would it be? Then what's really happening is that when a person pays the redemption money, he's trying to gain atonement for what happened. That's why you evaluate the person who was killed. Rabbi Yishmael bin Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, he holds demei mazik, that what you're trying to do, you're trying to redeem one's own soul. Again, I'm sorry. I'm doing three things at once. So let's stick to one thing at once. I'm starting again. V'natan pidyon nafsho. Yeah, one has to redeem his soul. D'mei nizak. Tanakama holds. Who do you evaluate? You evaluate the person who was killed. Rabbi Yishmael ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, d'mei mazik. He says you evaluate the person who owns the ox. So the Gemara suggests, my love behaka mifligi, isn't their argument as follows? D'masav al kufa mamona. One opinion holds that the redemption money is really a monetary issue. Your ox killed someone, so now you owe the relatives the value of the person killed. So then the kofar is really a monetary issue. It's not a tax. The Torah is saying you have a million issues to deal with, but one of them is your ox killed a person. What's the value of damage that your ox did? So then the opinion that says you evaluate the person who was killed, the Gemara understands that opinion holds kufra mamona. The kofar that the Torah obligates to pay is not a tax, it's a monetary obligation. Your ox did damage, it killed the person. Evaluate the damage it did, evaluate that person's value, however we do that, and pay up to the relatives. So then according to that, well, Edom Zomimin would have to pay that, because it's like any other monetary obligation they tried to inflict. Umar Savar and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who holds that you're paying your own value, he holds kufra kapara, that the kofar that you're obligated to pay is to redeem your own soul. Your ox killed. You did a bad thing. You have to redeem your own soul from hell. So, okay, evaluate how much your own life is worth. So that's the opinion kufra kapara. That's what the Gemara wants to suggest. And then, if kofar is an idea of redemption, so then it's a tax. It's not a monetary issue. So now let's go back to our subject. The Gemara said, "Ein mishalmin et hakofar." They don't pay kofar. Why don't they pay kofar? Kasava kufa kapara. They must hold that the redemption money is in order to gain atonement. Well, that atonement was offered by the Torah to someone whose ox killed. These people, they're not, you know, your ox is something you can control to a degree, you should control better, but at the end of the day, you didn't try to kill anyone. Here they willfully sinned. They're not entitled to such an atonement. Vehani, and these hooligans, lavne kaparaninu, they're not entitled to this type of atonement. So that's why they don't pay kofar. So again, the Gemara brought the third din from the Braisa. The Braisa said, en mishalmin et hakofar, they don't pay redemption money. The Gemara suggested, why don't they pay the redemption money? If they testified that his ox killed for a third time, why don't they pay the kofar that they tried to obligate him? Because kasavre, we must hold in the braisa, kufra kapara, that the kofar money is there as an atonement. Vehani lavne kaparaninu, and they don't deserve this atonement. They're not worthy of it. So that's our interpretation. Now, once we've brought the subject into light, so the Gemara says, Man tana kufa kapara, who is of the opinion that kofar is there to attain atonement? Amar Rav Chisda, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Ditanya, as the Braisa explains, it says in the Torah, Venatan pidyon nafsho, a person whose ox gored and murdered a third time, he has to redeem his soul. Tanakama holds Dmei Nizak. He has to pay the value of the person who was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer Dmei Mazik. He has to evaluate his own life. My love back, aren't they arguing in the following? The Mal Savar Kufra Mamona, One opinion holds that kofar is a monetary issue, just like when your ox does damage, you have to pay. So in this case, when the ox killed, you have to evaluate and pay. And the other opinion holds that kofar is there to attain atonement. Isn't that the interpretation? Amar Rav Papa, lo. Rav Papa says, no. Now Rav Papa is the disciple of Rava, who was the son-in-law of Rav Chisda. So we went down two generations. Dekuli alma kufra kapara. Everyone holds that kofar money is there to attain atonement. So why is it that there's a machlokas? Who you evaluate? The guy who was killed or the owner of the ox? Their argument revolves around the following. One opinion holds you want to gain atonement for yourself, so you have to gain atonement for the person being murdered. So you evaluate the person who was murdered. And the other opinion says we evaluate the person who owns the ox, because that's the one who's getting atonement. You want to atone for your own life, for your causing the ox. It's you who deserve the death penalty when your ox killed. And the Torah says, I'll let you off the hook from the death penalty, but pay up. So you're paying for your own life. That's why everyone agrees that the idea of kofar is, it's to gain atonement. The question is, am I gaining atonement by paying up his life, or am I gaining atonement by saying, I deserve to, I have to at least pay for my life that's been spared, even though I was somewhat negligent, and so the ox killed someone. Shaiminan means we evaluate.
Okay. Question. Clarify. I'm not sure if I'm getting this straight. If we said, before Rav Papa came and clarified what the real argument is, if we had said that Rabbanan hold Kufra Mamon and Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Rav Ishmael ben Obed ben Broka, he holds that it's Kufra Kafa Kabara. So if that's the case, Ayitechen, would it be that we would hold like Rav Ishmael ben Rav Yochanan ben Broka, and in the Brisa about Edim Zomamin?
Why not?
I don't know. Stam, we would say that Rabbanan overweighed him, no?
So then you say that the author of this brisa sided with him, made a Stam brisa like him, yes? That's what you would have. Stam could be like a minority opinion. The brisa that gives you the two opinions was Stam against him, and our brisa was Stam for him.
Right, and even though
could be it's his brisa, could be he authored that
brisa. So why are we going with his brisa?
So that you'd say that the Gemara gave it that weight. You see, Rav Chiya and Rav Oshaya included it in their series of brisa, Tanu Rabbanan. So it's a very powerful brisa. The other brisa is just a detanya.
Could it be someone who we know Al Pele Shas, the halacha would not be like him, could be incorporated into a stam?
100%.
100%. It's only when we don't have verification from another source that we would go with whoever is more weighty.
To a degree, yeah.
And so they decided what was the halacha like by means of logic or like. I mean, we have Rabbanan here and one individual here, and the people who are authoring the brisa, are they also majority, or do they have to be majority if they're going to side with the individual over Rabbanan?
It's a long answer. You want it now?
It's very interesting. I really thought about it before. I
there were versions of brisos. As Rav Shriagon writes, different rabbis compiled their own series of brisos. The Talmud tells us that Rebbe had 13 versions of Mishnah brisa that he knew by heart. So it isn't far-fetched that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Yochanan ben Broka had his own series of brisos. That's not a problem. So sometimes the Gemara will quote a brisa, and the Gemara will say, Hamani, who authored that brisa? The author of that brisa was this Tana or that Tana, and that's why the brisa is stam like him, because he's the author of that brisa. So that's point number one. Sometimes the brisa was not authored by that Tana, but yet the brisa gave him the weight of stam. Either because the rabbi who authored that brisa felt that way, or because his whole academy felt that way. And here there might be some distinction between Rav Chiya and Rav Oshaya and any other brisa that's quoted. And then you have to add to that the weight that the Talmud gives a brisa when it quotes it. The fact that the Talmud quoted that brisa, so that gives it a certain amount of weight. And then it depends on what the Talmud did with that brisa. Did the Talmud treat that brisa as a given that that brisa is a part of the halacha? Or did the Talmud just quote that brisa for one point? And then, by the way, you see some other points which are stam, that seem to go with one opinion. So that, those are the variants, those are some of the variants you have to look for as you look at a situation where the Talmud quotes a brisa that's stam like one opinion. It's not so uniform. It depends, do I have any other rule? Is it going against the stam in the Mishnah? Did the Talmud make a point of telling me, well, that brisa is the opinion of so-and-so, so then the Talmud, to a degree, was taking away some of the strength of the stam of that brisa. That's why you can't just say one blanket rule. It depends a little bit.
In this case, what are we saying? That the Gemara sided with Rav Oshaya, sided with Yishmael ben Rav Yochanan ben Broka.
Remember, everything you're saying is within a hava amina of the Gemara.
Right, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a hava amina.
So that's a little bit unclear here. Meaning, yes, you have a stam like Rav Yishmael ben Osher Yochanan ben Broka, according to Rav Chisna. But then you have Rav Chisna saying, Rav Yishmael ben Osher Yochanan ben Broka, he, is that just the Tana who holds that, or is that the Tana of that Braisa? Okay, it seems like the poskim, the Rishonim, would treat it as a stam brisa like him. Yes, in that stage of Nahavamin.
Yeah. So they didn't go by these the same klalim that we go by. Majority ways.
What do you mean?
I'm saying that the Gemara or whoever decided to go with his brisa, with his version of the brisa. They saw, you know, majority versus minority. You could still go like an individual. I mean, the people who decide the halacha here or paskening, they wouldn't be stuck going with the majority over an individual in all cases.
This is a much broader discussion. We can't. It's enough for now. Back to our Gemara. Maita Mayu de Rabbanan. Rabbi Shmuel, I understand if Kufra is as an atonement, I understand that he evaluates his own value because that's who's getting atonement. But why do the rabbis disagree with him? Ah, so the rabbis disagree with him because there's the same word written twice in those parshiot. It says a little bit earlier in the Torah that if a person mistakenly sucks a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, so then he has to pay redemption money. He has to pay kasher yashit alav, as will be placed upon him. And it says by the person whose ox gored a third time, in kofel yushat alav. So shat means to place. Ki shatli elokim zera acher. Shet, Seth, was named Shet because Hashem placed for me another seed instead of Hevel that was murdered. So the word lashit, to place, is used once in reference to the woman who miscarried and once in reference to the person whose ox gored. Well, who do you evaluate in the case of the woman who miscarried? You evaluate the person who was damaged, the woman, the fetus. So then who should you evaluate in the case of the ox that gored? The person who was damaged. So that's the derivation. What's the source for Rabbanan's opinion? Ne'emar hashata lemata v'ne'emar hashata lemala. The term lashit, to place upon a person an obligation to pay, is used in both these places. Malalan bidinizak, afkan bidinizak. Just as over there it's the one who's damaged, the pregnant woman, so to here it is the one who was damaged, the person who was killed. Rabbi Ishmael, so what does Rabbi Ishmael answer that? He says, but the Pasuk says, V'natan pidyon nafsho k'tiv. If the Pasuk says he should give the redemption of his own soul. The redemption of his own soul means you evaluate the owner of the ox. The Rabbanan, what do the rabbis answer to that? In pidyon nafsho k'tiv. You're right. The verse does say that. Mi'uki shaminan b'dnizak shaminan. Yes, he redeems his own soul, but how does he redeem his own soul? By paying off the value of the person that was damaged. They say that's not a proof that you evaluate him. That's just a proof that the money that's being paid is as a redemption, as a gaining atonement. But how you evaluate in order to attain that atonement, that's a different question.
What is Lamata and Lamala referencing?
Lamata is our parsha. Lamala is earlier on where the Torah describes a man who mistakenly hits a pregnant woman. Lamala means earlier in the parsha.
Is that common?
Yes.
Is using that phraseology because it's in one parsha?
That's a good question. It's not exactly in one parsha. You're so smart. Okay. So there is a Shita Mikubetzes that suggests that when the Gemara uses the term Ne'emar Lemata, Ne'emar Lemalo, it is not a Gzeira Shava. And I was careful the way I worded it, because it's not so clear when the Gemara uses this terminology that the Gemara is really saying Gzeira Shava. It could be that what the Gemara is saying is Limud Sosu Minam Forash. Meaning there's another type of derivation which is not Gzeira Shava, which is just saying, well, the Torah has a consistency of usage of phraseologies. And that's what the Medrash Rabbah uses in many of the Midrashim, the assumption that an identical word will have an identical meaning in different contexts. Now, that's a logical assumption, but then that's more of an understanding of what pshat in the pasuk is rather than a derivation. And the Shita Mikubetzes and Baba Kama suggest that when the Gemara derives ne'emar, ne'emar, that's not a gzera shava, but rather it's limud satu min amforash. And then there are other sources that support that. But that's a subject I wasn't going to go into tonight. Back to our Gemara.
So the conclusion here, it seems like the halacha in this case might be more likely with Rabbanan.
The only indication you have is that they're Rabbim and he's Yachid. What else do you have?
Well, the answer is Kasha. His explanation.
So you have that too. Fine. Ve'ein nimkarin be'eved ivri. They demzomimin don't get sold as an eved ivri. That was the fourth unique din of eidem zomimin. Savar Rav Amnuna le'meimar. Rav Amnuna thought to say animilecha de'it le'ledidei. That's talking about specifically in a case where they testified he stole $1 million. And you know what? He has those $1 million in the bank. Demigu de'iu lo nizdabin, being that he wasn't going to be sold over the theft, inunami lo mizdabnu, they should neither get sold. Aval, but Rav Amnuna thought to say, hecha de'led le'ledidei, in a case where he didn't have the funds, afagav de'itlu le'didu, even though they do have those funds, mizdabnu, they should get sold as slaves, because that's what they were going to do to him. By making him pay money that he didn't have, he would have had to get sold into slavery. So they have the money, so what? So the Gemara counters, no, but they should say back to the man, if you would have had the money, would you have gotten sold? So we obligated you money, which could have ended up into slavery. But had you had the money, it wouldn't have. So you have to obligate us the same thing we want to obligate you, which is firstly money, and only if we don't have the slavery. And not Nami. So then we too, Domiz Davninan, we shouldn't get sold. So that's not the right pshat. Ela savar Rav Amnuna le'meimar, hanimile hecha de'itlei, ole didei, ole didu. Rav Amnuna thought to say his following. When don't they get sold into slavery? When either he or they have money. But if he didn't have the money, so he was on the verge of being sold into slavery, and they don't have the money, so they're in the identical scenario, so they should also get sold into slavery. The Braisa was coming to preclude a situation where one of them has the money. That's what Rav Amnuna thought to say. And Rava said, no, that's not so. The reason they don't get sold into slavery is because of a derivation. It's not the logic you suggested, but rather the pasuk says, "V'nimkau b'gnevato amar Rachmana." The merciful one, the Torah says, he gets sold because of his theft. And we understand that to mean b'gnevato, specifically for his theft, would he get sold, v'lo bizmamo, and not as a result of becoming an Edom Zomim. So b'gnevato is a miut, and that miut precludes Edom Zomimim from being sold. And that's the bottom line. So we have the four dinim of the Braisa, all derived from Sukkim, and the final din is that they never get sold into slavery over testimony that a person stole.